to the foreign parties involved in the wave of violence in Iran, which followed a bloody terror attack by Daesh at a holy shrine in the city of Shiraz late last month. Back then, Salami said, "To the House of Saud and the media under its control, we say this, we will come after you. We shall bereave you of your come. The enemy always breaks itself with its own mistakes. We once again defeated them using their own miscalculation." That's all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today we complete the explanation of Surah Hashr, which was revealed in Medina and is number 59 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. The word Hashr in this surah does not denote the gathering on the day of resurrection, but it connotes people's gathering for migration and refers to the abject fate and defeat of the joint stratagems against Islam and Muslims of the Arab hypocrites and the rebellious Israelites who breached their agreement with the Prophet. We start from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 18 and 19.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله ولتنظر نفس ما قدمت لغد واتقوا الله إن الله خبير بما تعملون ولا تكونوا كالذين نسوا الله فأنساهم أنفسهم أولئك هم الفاسقون.
O you who have faith, be wary of Allah, and let every soul consider what it sends ahead for tomorrow, and be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is aware of what you do. And do not be like those who forgot Allah, and He made them forget themselves. It is they who are the transgressors. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said hypocrisy makes a person devilish to the extent that he or she embarks on deceiving others and trying in vain to escape the misery in which they have trapped themselves. But there is escape for the Satan and his followers, who will be cast into the fires of hell and remain there forever for the breaking of promises and tempting simple-minded people to commit sins. The ayahs that we recited to you now advises Muslims to reflect on the fate of the ever-rebellious Israelites and also on the fate of the hypocrites who pretend to be Muslims, since it is proper cognition of the Almighty Creator and awe of His Majesty that makes a person better aware of afterlife and the provisions to be prepared for it, keeping in mind that Allah is aware of each and everything. Ayah 19 means to say that those who are negligent of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator, He will make them forget their own selves, and they end up as transgressors. In other words, forgetting God Almighty leads a person to indulge in carnal desires and pleasures of the flesh, in violation of humanitarian values, and oblivious of the goal of creation and the certainty of the day of resurrection for the final judgment. One of the worst afflictions of a person is to forget his or her own self, which means forgetting the God-given inherent faculties that distinguish human beings from other creatures. Thus, it is full awareness of the divine laws which create self-control, respect for the rights of others, and the doing of good, while preventing us from committing sin. These ayahs teach us that, number one, faith is based upon proper cognition of God in order to abstain from sins. Number two, we should think of our faith on Judgment Day and make due provisions. And number three, one who forgets God forgets the goal of creation and purpose of life, thereby ending up as transgressor of humanitarian values. We now invite you to listen to Ayah 20 of Surah Hashr.
لا يستوي أصحاب النار وأصحاب الجنة أصحاب الجنة هم الفائزون.
Not equal are the inmates of the fire and the inhabitants of paradise. It is the inhabitants of paradise who are the successful ones. Here is a comparison which is made between two groups, that is, the God-fearing believers who are cognizant of the source of creation and the resurrection day, and the heedless ones who are oblivious of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator and thus become forgetful of their own selves by indulging in sins and trampling humanitarian values. The disbelievers and unrepentant sinners end up in the fires of hell as a consequence of their evil deeds, while the true believers who obeyed God are rewarded the bliss of paradise for their success. From this ayah we'll learn that, number one, physical death is not the end of life to justify the insatiable quest for worldly gains that might end up in the inferno. The transient life of the mortal world is actually the field for sowing the seeds of good deeds in order to reap benefits in afterlife with the reward of the bliss of paradise. And number two, there is no third way other than truth and falsehood, which means human beings will either enter paradise or fall in hell. Here is Ayah 21 of the same surah.
لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل لرأيته خاشعا متصدعا من خشية الله وتلك الأمثال نضربها للناس لعلهم يتفكرون.
Had we sent down this Quran upon a mountain, you would have surely seen it humbled and gone to pieces with the fear of Allah. We draw such examples for mankind so that they may reflect. One of the educational methods of the Noble Quran is to give examples and draw comparisons. Here it speaks of the great impact of the revelation of the divine words of the final heavenly scripture that was God entrusted to the last and greatest messenger with the universal message of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The ayah says that proper reflection on the contents of the Noble Quran reveals that its words are so penetrating that had they been sent down upon a mountain possessing intellect and perception, it would have trembled and broken into pieces. It is thus a matter of surprise that the negligent persons have become so stone-hearted because of the sins they commit, that the recitation of the ayahs of the Noble Quran has no effect upon them, because they do not reflect upon the contents of the heavenly scripture to acquire awe and proper cognizance of the Almighty Creator. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, at times, the Noble Quran applies indirect methods through similitudes to draw comparison in order to impact the audience. Number two, the hearts of the disbelievers and sinners become harder than stones. And number three, failure to reflect upon divine words is to drift away from truth. Now we conclude the explanation of Surah Hashr with the recitation of ayahs
22, 23, and 24. هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار المتكبر سبحان الله عما يشركون هو الله الخالق البارئ المصور له الأسماء الحسنى يسبح له ما في السماوات والأرض وهو العزيز الحكيم.
He is Allah. There is no God except Him. No heir of the unseen and the seen. He is the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. He is Allah. There is no God except Him. The Sovereign, the All-Holy, the All-Benign, the Securer, the All-Conserver, the Almighty, the All-Compeller, the All-Magnanimous. Glorified be Allah from any partners that they may ascribe to Him. He is Allah, the Creator, the Maker, the Granter of forms and color. His are the most excellent names. Whatever there is in the heavens and in the earth, glorify Him, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. The reference here is to some of the attributes of the Almighty Creator, whose chosen name is Allah, with which all the three ayahs begin, followed by 15 of His attributes, with His oneness being the first and foremost. He is fully aware of all things, whether visible or unseen. His mercy is all-encompassing, and He's the most beneficent. His sovereignty rules over the entire universe. He is the holy, the benign, the impeccable, the wise, and the just who never wrongs anyone and guarantees security to all. He's the omnipotent, the omniscient, with power over all and everything. He's the grantor of the various forms, shapes, sizes, and colors that abound in the universe. His are the most excellent names, and He's magnanimous and far glorious to have any partner. These ayahs teach us that, number one, God's awareness and mercy have no limits and encompass everything. Number two, the one and only creator of the universe is also its absolute ruler. Number three, He is free of any shortcoming or flaw, and whatever He bestows are favors and security. And number four, only Allah deserves glory. Sanctified is He with the most excellent attributes, and wise, impeccable, and absolutely perfect is He. Well, dear listeners, on this note, we come to the end of Surah Hashr. And inshallah, we will start explanation of Surah Mumtahine next week. God bless you and goodbye until then.
Is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches!
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Some Americans have gone to polling stations across the country and voted in midterm elections. Certain Americans of voting age, like those with felonies, are not eligible to vote in most states. Now, these Americans account for 2% of the voting population. For more than a century, less than half of eligible voters in America have gone to polling stations and voted in midterm elections. Now, these statistics are worse for minorities. One main reason for the low turnouts is that voters do not feel represented in Congress. Now, this feeling is also reflected in congressional approval ratings taken each month.
Will you represent?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I am your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we will discuss midterm elections, voter turnout statistics in the United States, and why most Americans do not vote in midterm elections. We will speak about voter suppression and explore who the members of Congress really represent. And as usual, we are pleased to have our two guests on our show, Daniel Burke, who is a former candidate for the U.S. Senate, and Robert Patillo, who is a political strategist. Stay tuned.
For more than a century, more than half of the American population did not vote in midterm elections. A country that has been calling itself the beacon of democracy is unable to even draw half of the voting population to its polling stations. Normally, the turnout has been even less than 40%, and when it has been more than that percentage, the main reason is usually due to some extraordinary event. Experts believe that in recent years, the relative rise in votes has been attributed mostly to the radical supporters of Trump on the one hand and Trump's opposers on the other, who feel they have so much at stake if Trump and his allies return to power. The status of American participation in elections for more than a century makes Biden's comments on democracy look more like a joke.
My fellow Americans, please, if you have a seat, take it. I speak to you tonight from sacred ground in America, Independence Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is where America made its Declaration of Independence to the world more than two centuries ago, with an idea unique among nations that in America, we're all created equal. This is where the United States Constitution was written and debated. This is where we set in motion the most extraordinary experiment of self-government the world has ever known.
Now, according to the United States Elections Project, which is an information source for the U.S. electoral system, since 1916, there has not been a midterm election with more than 50% turnout. Now, more than half the midterms after that period have had less than 40% turnout, and normally a low turnout is attributed to a belief that there is no meaningful difference in which candidate or party you vote for. So do Americans care to vote in midterm elections?
Well, I mean, you have to put it into context that in any normal presidential election, you have perhaps 35% and usually more of the population that doesn't vote at all. The population is actually eligible to vote. In the midterm elections, this goes down even further. And so what you mostly have is people who come out who are politically engaged, who want to, largely they want to punish the political party that succeeded in the presidential elections. They want to express their discontent. And that's generally what you've got right now in the United States, that the will is the vote against someone and not the vote for something. I think that's what we're going to see in the midterms.
Now, American political hypocrisy is very consistent. While it is seen time and again, the U.S. officials and politicians criticize other countries for their democratic status or their voter turnout, the U.S. voter turnout is much lower than many countries. Now, mayoral elections in the country are even worse than the midterms. For instance, in 2019, Philadelphia's mayor was elected with just 27% turnout and Chicago's with just 35%. So why do only a few Americans vote in U.S. elections?
I think part of the issue in America is that we are one of the few countries that has a two-party system. In many other countries, you have a parliamentary system where you have multiple parties, and then those parties form a coalition in order to create a government. In America, by contrast, you only have two parties representing the quote-unquote left and quote-unquote right of the political spectrum. Many people feel left out of that process. And let's say if I'm an environmentalist who is also a fiscal conservative, there's not really a party for that group in America. And because of this, many people are just disenfranchised and disenchanted with the political process to the point that they stay home on election day. I think that we're seeing those numbers slowly shift because, simply put, the importance of these elections and the amount of money being spent to mobilize people to vote. But I think because we only have a two-party system, that's why the result is so few people voting in elections.
In terms of demographics, U.S. voters are usually older, wealthier, and white. African-American and Latino voters vote less than white voters do. Representatives also tend to support policy in favor of this demographic group. Minorities that feel neglected and unrepresented in the country's political establishment will become politically disengaged. According to a 538 IPSOS poll, those who never vote tend to be low income, young, and not belonging to any political party.
Increasing cynicism and distrust in the U.S. government from the American population. I mean, it's been going on for decades that people see the deindustrialization of the United States. They see the foreign entanglements, the insane regime change wars that have provided nothing but pain for the world and for the United States population. And there's every time that a character comes along that promises hope and change, it turns out that they have merely continued in this type of participation in horrific wars and destruction of economy. So people are appropriately depressed about that. But what we actually need in the United States is for people to come forward and recognize an affirmative conception, an affirmative policy to solve that. The last time anyone talked about that in a sincere way was Trump and his campaign. But then, of course, his sincerity was quite in question when the result of his presidency was a continuation of those policies.
It is not just that most Americans do not want to vote, but there is a large population that is not allowed to. In the November midterm elections, an estimated 2% of the voting age population are ineligible to vote because of laws banning people with felony convictions from voting. According to a report published by the Sentencing Project, the population of those who are ineligible to vote due to a felony is close to 5 million.
And that is not all. Some policies also make it more difficult for people to vote. About one-fifth of the adult American population, which is about 48 million people, struggle to read at a basic level. And now some states have made it even more difficult for volunteers to help those who struggle to read to cast their ballots. In Georgia, Olivia Coley Pearson, who has helped voters for years, was arrested in 2020 when she was helping voters who struggle to read at the polls.
Well, the problem is that congresspeople and senators truly represent the special interest groups. As I said, over $1.5 billion have been spent on this election thus far, and thus the people who are elected mainly represent the moneyed political interests, the special interest groups, the donors who are able to finance their campaigns, as opposed to the American people. It's now impossible for a normal person of average means to get elected just on a campaign representing the people. You have to have enough money, even on the state and local level, to put television ads up, to hire campaign consultants to charge over $100,000 a year, to put together field teams and operations and buses and vans, etc.
Voter suppression is a tactic used by some politicians or parties to discourage or prevent groups of people from voting in hope of getting elected. Historically, only white male landowners had the right to vote. But when women, African Americans, and other minorities won their right to vote, American politicians came up with other strategies to try and suppress those voters in districts that they believed would vote against them.
Yes, we do have a long way to go to get all of the people registered of voting age, but if we can get 500 registered today, this would be a magnificent step forward.
Voter suppression has been a part of the United States political scene since the nation's inception.
Some politicians try to win re-elections by making it harder for certain populations, demographics, and communities to vote. A common strategy is to reduce polling locations and also polling station times by having them open only during business hours. The day of the midterm elections is not a public holiday, and many low-income workers will not be able to get the day off to go to polling stations and cast their vote during business hours.
The key thing right now is that the people in political power in the United States, in the mainstream uniparty, war party situation, they want to keep Americans demoralized. They want to keep them that way so that they can be controlled. They want to keep them distracted as much as possible. And therefore, they don't want them engaged in politics except when they're absolutely required to turn out votes to get their candidate in. And right now, I think if you look at the past several weeks, some friends of mine have been involved in interventions, and many people that I've never met before have interrupted leading politicians. For example, Barack Obama, Mike Pompeo, and earlier Kamala Harris, recently Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Elizabeth Warren, and have demanded of them that they take account of the extraordinary danger of thermonuclear war, which has been created by their policies. The coup in Ukraine in 2014 and everything since then leading into the special military operation by Russia and Ukraine, what is much more than a proxy war between NATO and Russia, now with American boots on the ground, so-called, in Ukraine, we are really in the midst of World War III, and we have to prevent it from going thermonuclear. We have to stop this insanity.
Now, another strategy that politicians use is gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is the manipulation of electoral district boundaries to create an advantage for a specific party. For instance, Democrats try to construct coalition districts of liberals and minorities together with conservatives that results in Democratic-leaning districts. Now, Republicans try to place liberals together in a district and conservatives in others to create clear partisan districts.
Voter suppression is one of the most important issues in American politics that the political right, for some reason, pretends does not exist. Voter suppression is the process by which you make it more difficult for individuals at the lower end of the economic spectrum and the social spectrum in America to vote. And by doing this, you're able to skim off votes that makes it easier for parties that lack majority power to be able to win. So when people talk about voter suppression, they think that it's, you know, someone standing outside of the polls with a fire hose and dogs, not letting anybody vote. When in reality, it is really just trying to get one out of every 100 voters to not vote.
When American politicians mostly represent the white, wealthy community, it is no surprise that they would have no interest in the rest of the population to vote. The New York Times reported in September that 97 members of the Congress had reported trade in companies influenced by their committees. When contacted, many of them have said that the trade had been carried out by a spouse or broker with no input from them.
There is every effort made to prevent legitimate ideas and concerns, a passion for the general welfare, to come forward. Look at the case of Chuck Schumer. He's the U.S. senator from New York. Right now, he is challenged by Diane Sayre, an independent candidate for U.S. Senate, if the LaRouche was right party. And she is the only independent candidate who was able to get on the ballot with extraordinary ballot requirements, 66,000 petition signatures she turned in for a 45,000 petition signature requirement, which is absolutely gigantic relative to the rest of the country. I ran for U.S. Senate in New Jersey, and I needed 800 signatures. So this required a very significant operation of volunteers and supporters. And what happened? She's been kept out of the debate, that major debate that took place between the Republican candidate and Chuck Schumer. And she's been placed on a Ukrainian hit list which was financed by the U.S. or supported by the U.S. government. With votes that were made by Chuck Schumer to send tens of billions of dollars to Ukraine, including to support their civil government. And that list was organized by the Ukrainian government to label people on it info-terrorists, who they claimed, the Ukrainian government representative, should be treated as war criminals.
When the loyalty of politicians lies with campaign donors and lobbyists, it is no wonder people would not be interested in voting. Representatives are not allowed to receive gifts of value from lobbyists. So instead of receiving funds directly, they hold campaign fundraising events at holiday location resorts and receive contribution from lobbyists who fly over to the event and use that contribution to pay for their hotel, airfare, and catering bills.
We are often campaigning toward the lowest common denominator in America. instead of having these kind of high-minded ideas of democracy and of exceptionalism pushing the nation forward, it very much comes down to a question of who do you dislike the least? You're not voting for the better candidate, but the lesser of two evils, which are running. So because of this, you have a lot of voters who feel that they are not spoken to. We have something called the Citizens United case that was decided in the year 2010, which allowed unlimited money to come into American politics. This unlimited money meant unlimited influence for the rich, powerful, and well-connected. And we see this in American politics as it currently is constituted.
With all the dirty politics surrounding the election of members of Congress, it's not surprising that the Congress's approval rating is almost always very low. Now, according to recent polls conducted by the Gallup, only 23% of Americans approve, while 75% disapprove the way Congress is handling its job. Now, this is while the monthly poll shows that since January of 2021, the approval rating has always been lower than 40%, with a high of 36% and a low of 16% in June. So why does Congress have such a low approval rating?
Well, if you look at it, America has a system that is built to do nothing. Our founders were so concerned about one party or one branch of government becoming too powerful and then inducing tyranny on the public, that they create a system of checks and balances, which is now turned into a system of gridlock. In order to get anything signed into law, you have to have something passed. Passed by the House of Representatives, then it goes to the Senate, it has to pass the Senate, then it goes back through a process where you bring the bills together, where both sides vote on it.
The Gallup polls show that approval ratings for the Congress has almost always been low since 1975. There has only been a spike around 2001, just after the September 11 attacks on the World Trade Center. Interestingly, the approval is attributed to Congress' joint resolution that authorized the use of the United States Armed Forces against those responsible for the September 11 attacks.
Now, with the exception of a few elections driven by severe and harsh partisan political campaigns, most midterm elections in the U.S. are dull and most Americans do not care to participate. Low turnout showed political disengagement by the majority of the population, but it also might be what many American politicians truly want. While serving their own interests and being loyal only to wealthy corporations, the two major U.S. political parties will most likely continue to use dirty tactics for winning elections at any cost. Now it's time to see what Abbas Mutarim has prepared for us this week.
Every election season, like clockwork, we're told to get out and vote by the powers that be, and that we have a certain responsibility to do this for the betterment of quote-unquote American society. But simply saying to just get out and vote, it's really just political immaturity at its finest, because political change doesn't just come from voting and participating in politics one day every voting season. And in reality, this simple act of voting, it's really just a bourgeoisie instrument for making change in the settler colony. In this episode of Power to the People, we is going to take a look at voting and what it really means for the people. First and foremost, America, like its contradictory self, it claims to be a democracy, which means that the people have full control over the political institutions that govern them, which we know is not true at all, as it's corporations that govern daily life. So what does it mean? What does it mean that we are supposed to vote every election season? Can we actually make positive change through voting? Because positive change means egalitarianism and communalistic practices are put into the daily life. Well, to answer these questions, we must have a proper interpretation of history. And if we look at history, if we look at the current state of America, the American government itself is a settler colonial government that commits and continues to commit genocide against Black and Indigenous people. The U.S., it got all of its wealth from the enslavement of Africans. And what was the legal document that backed all of this? It's the so-called American Constitution. This same document is what governs the political, social, and economic life for America and its citizens. And it exercises control over its colonial subjects, as that's what we are as Black and Indigenous people. So each time that we are voting for change, in reality, we are voting to uphold this same genocidal settler colonial government. And while locally there's important measures and propositions that are on the ballot, corporate control over these elections makes it hard for measures or policies that have egalitarianism throughout it to actually pass. We must understand that we can't actually vote away settler colonialism, and we can't vote away a slave system. The whole system itself has to go. So that begs the question, what is real change and how do we get it? Well, real change, it's rooted in the culmination of positive energy of the people that is garnered in the name of humanity. And the highest culmination of all this positive energy can be simply described as a revolution, which overthrows the corporate rule and control of the United States of America, and it installs a society in which egalitarianism and communalism is at its core. Simply put, the people are now in control of their destiny, and that's the way it should be. And the way we build this is by organizing amongst our people. We have to free our minds so that our bodies can follow. This means that we must politically educate ourselves, our households, our families, and our communities. And with proper political education, we then should develop an undying love for our people and communities. And with this undying love, we should become the change that we seek in our community, providing material resources and programming that brings positive change and love in our community into fruition. And once we see that we can embody love, then of course, we will see that we can truly govern ourselves under these principles rather than the destructive principles of white supremacist capitalism. This is Power to the People. I'm Abbas Mutakine.
And that was the program, everyone. Thank you for watching. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight. The racist behavior of the anti-Islamic groups in Germany has angered the Muslim community in that country. Far-right groups in Germany are trying to exploit the current economic and energy crises to instill fear and hatred against minorities, in particular Muslims. But despite the spread of Islamophobia in the West and the rise of far-right groups in the last two decades, conversion to Islam among Europeans has actually increased significantly. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. German authorities registered at least 662 Islamophobic crimes in 2021. There were more than 46 mosques attacked in Germany, and at least 17 people were injured because of anti-Muslim violence. Suleyman Demir, project director at the anti-discrimination group INSAN, said attacks on Muslims and mosques have seen a rise following the coronavirus pandemic, and the situation is serious as Germany is facing economic difficulties. Suleyman Demir added, the statistics have definitely increased, especially for women who wear the headscarf. He said, we're also increasingly seeing from our community that not only men but also women who wear the hijab are exposed to much more physical attacks, and this has actually increased significantly in recent years. German authorities recorded 152 Islamophobic attacks, while at least 7 people were injured in the first 6 months of 2022. But that might not be the full picture because many of the attacks go unreported. Suleyman Demir, who is leading the Network Against Discrimination and Islamophobia project at INSAN, said many Muslims do not report incidents to the German police, thinking their complaints will not be taken seriously. Demir added, sometimes they don't feel heard or seen, and that's why they think, oh, why report it anyway? There won't be any consequences. He urged better sensitivity training for police officers to tackle Islamophobic crimes. Demir said, police officers are not properly trained. They're not trained on tackling anti-Muslim crimes. Adding that many incidents of Islamophobia are not properly registered by police in crime statistics. Suleyman Demir also warned that far-right groups are trying to exploit the ongoing economic and energy crisis in Germany to stir fear and hatred against minorities, and in particular Muslims. He said, it is easy to portray minorities as scapegoats, that is, as scapegoats for political or economic problems in the country. And the far-right groups naturally use this method to say that these minorities are to be blamed for the major economic crisis in the country. Therefore, I see a connection between the rising right-wing extremism and the economic situation in the country. Demir said it is important for Muslims and minorities to be more politically active to strengthen democracy and counter the rise of the far-right. He said, there are people from 180 to 200 different nations here, so I assume that Muslims will also feel at home here, especially those who were born here. They will take part in democratic decision-making and, of course, will also shape the future of Germany. Meanwhile, the Shia Studies website has also reported on the same story. A survey conducted by researchers from Germany, Netherlands and Britain revealed veiled Muslim women face far more discrimination than others when applying for jobs in these countries. Utrecht University in the Netherlands, Oxford University in England and the German Centre for Integration and Migration Research conducted a joint field survey on the discrimination faced by religious minorities seeking jobs in the three European labour markets, that is, Germany, Netherlands and Spain. The findings of the experiment were shared in an article published by Oxford Academic recently titled Discrimination Unveiled, a field experiment on the barriers faced by Muslim women in Germany, the Netherlands and Spain. The experiment was conducted with the curriculum vitae of the same people by using the same content and information with both veiled and unveiled photographs. As the photographs on curriculum vitae shows whether the person wears a hijab or not, the cross-nationally harmonized experiment aimed to demonstrate to what extent the responses of these people received from employers differ. The results in the Netherlands proved that 35% of women with headscarves got responses from employers, while this rate rose to 70% among those not wearing headscarves. The experiment said a similar scenario in Germany showing that 25% of the veiled candidates and 53% of the unveiled candidates received responses from employers. The article stressed Muslims are perceived by the public at large as a difficult-to-integrate group, mainly due to their high levels of religiosity, which are seemingly at odds with the so-called European values and the secular lifestyles of Western societies. It presented robust evidence that veiled Muslim women are discriminated against in Germany and in the Netherlands, for example, when applying for jobs that require a high level of customer contact. In Germany, even though employers responded to the job application of half of the unveiled Muslim women, they did not give any response to 75% of the Muslim women wearing headscarves. The website of the Middle East Monitor has also covered the same story. A new report has warned Islamophobia remains a growing threat across Europe, with several countries enacting policies that have contributed to the institutionalization of an issue that should instead be stamped out with urgency. According to the European Islamophobia Report 2021, Islamophobia was as pressing a problem across the European continent as it was in previous years. It said countries like Germany, France and Britain became the main spots of anti-Muslim hatred and Islamophobic incidents. The report, which focused on the 27 European countries and was prepared with contributions from 35 leading academics and experts in the field, read, "Furthermore, anti-Muslim campaigns of far-right political parties in the European Union member states dominate the discrimination against Muslim individuals and communities." The report links the persistence of anti-Muslim racism to the backdrop of general worrisome trend, the decline of liberal democracy in Europe. It warns that major forces within Europe, singling out countries like Germany, are still investing less in the fight against Islamophobia and more into normalizing Islamophobia. The report said, "The Islamophobia becoming normalized and institutionalized by the so-called liberal democracies such as Germany and France is alarming." Apart from Islamophobic incidents across Europe, the report details systemic discrimination faced by Muslims in all areas of life, from employment to healthcare to education and to the justice system. Germany has the second largest Muslim community in Western Europe, after France, with total inhabitants of more than 84 million. Among the country's nearly 5.5 million Muslims, 3 million are of Turkish origin.
الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. This day is an important day for us, but it also really agitates the Americans. So those who think that the US is an untouchable power, when we look at the events that took place on this day, it becomes evident that this is not the case. That is completely vulnerable. This turns into an experience for us. Three events took place on this day, some of which are directly related to the Americans and others are indirectly related to them. One event was the exile of Imam Khomeini, which took place on the 13th of Aban, November 4, 1964, pro-American law.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Why was Imam Khomeini sent into exile? Because a law was ratified by the direct order of the Shah, Muhammad Reza Pahlavi, to the parliament of that day. According to that law, the Americans who were in Iran were granted immunity. There were about 40 to 50,000 Americans in Iran and the military, security, and economic organizations. According to this law, if these individuals committed any sort of crime in Iran, they couldn't be prosecuted. So, for example, if an American happened to run someone over while driving their car, the judicial system of the country had no right to prosecute them. This was the immunity law of the Americans. Imam Khomeini did not tolerate this. He gave a long speech, his voice recording, and the text of this speech are available today. Because of this speech, he was exiled for 13 years. We say 13 years because the revolution happened at the end of these 13 years. If the revolution hadn't taken place, this period of exile might have even lasted 30 years because of his opposition to this pro-American law.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the World with Reporters.
The Taliban's Ministry of Vice and Virtue have banned Afghan women from visiting all parks, using gyms and public baths.
Recently, women are banned from going to parks, sports clubs and public baths by the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan.